Bill, I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast, and this week I am happy to be joined by Eugene for the first time. Eugene, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Nate. How are you doing?
Good. And for anybody who does not know you or is not aware of you, why don't you give a couple-minute rundown of who you are and what you are trying to do with the game of pool and billiards and snooker and all the good cue sports?
Yeah, so I created a website called thecuist.net, and my idea was kind of have a, you know, like a drudge report for cue sports, and you know, that's snooker, free cushion, pool, and you know, whatever news that comes out of those sports, just kind of like a, you know, a first page that people will visit just to get their information aside from what they already might discover in the mainstream. And of course, I was lucky to find your podcast and we got in touch and, partnered. And, I've been kind of helping with, disseminating that information, on the Facebook pages as well. So hopefully, our listeners have been enjoying that as well. So yeah, so that's kind of the deal.
Yeah, so basically, if you've been paying attention to the Cue It Up Facebook page, which if you listen to the podcast and you don't know about the page, it's on Facebook at Cue It Up, and you should probably head over there and like the page. But basically, all of the posts that are out there pretty much at this point, every now and then I'll post something specifically, but just about everything is coming from Eugene. So especially all the snooker stuff, which I personally love to see, because it's if you've ever played the game of snooker, it is ridiculously so much harder than pool, and it's a great game, but it's so frustrating, but it's amazing to watch the most talented snooker players in the world play the game. It is truly awesome to see what's going on, and you help keep me informed with that, so thanks for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And snooker is actually, I mean, you kind of have to be envious of snooker fans, right? I mean, they have these professional events throughout the year, all the time. You know, if you've been, you know, looking at reading the news that I've been posting, it's like back to back, there's like major snooker events for the past, like, you know, the whole summer and then through the fall here.
And all of them.
Yeah, it's just, sorry. Right.
And all of them have like several hundred thousand dollars for first place. It's,
yeah, it's amazing.
It's awesome. I mean, it shows what actually structured cue sports can be. Billiards isn't
for sure
like that. Pool isn't like that. Nine ball, even black ball in the UK, none of those are really like that, but they could be if they have the right infrastructure in place to basically build it up to that point. It shows that there is a market for it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's why, you know, Matchroom, you know, has been kind of, I guess, I don't want to say a savior yet, but, you know, they've been kind of, you know, holding the U.S. Open. They got the rights to the U.S. Open, and of course the Moscone Cup, and you know, pool fans are just, you know, have very high hopes that you know, the sport can, you know, maybe one day turn into something as popular and well known as snooker.
I'm hoping for that as well, and I think that Matchroom is doing a great job. As I've said multiple times on the podcast, they are definitely taking the game, I think, in a great direction with where they're going, and that is going to be evident hopefully pretty soon by the Moscone Cup, like you noticed. That's a couple of weeks away, so we will be chatting a whole bunch about that today.
Yeah.
You excited for that yet?
Oh, yeah, always excited about that. It's always a great event, and, you know, even better that the Cup is in America, and we're hoping to keep it in America.
And we're going to find out whether you think it will be in a little bit. Teaser alert. But before that, why don't we jump through all the stuff in the beginning of the podcast that I normally have to get covered? So I will start with, so one of the listeners recently reached out to the podcast who is, you know, basically just started just found the podcast recently and gave a what I think is a really, really good suggestion, which is basically cover the history of the Moscone Cup, where it came from, why is it named Moscone, what's happened since its inception, and basically give a brief history over what it is, where it came from, and why it's leading into this year and why this year is a big deal, or I guess any year is a big deal in general.
Right. That's a good idea.
Yeah. And I thought that was a really good idea. So I'm pretty sure this was Scott Pryor that came up with this idea, and I'm blanking on it right now. But thanks, Scott, for the suggestion, and I'm going to do that. So at some point in time in the next probably week, you're going to see – well, actually, in the next couple weeks, there's going to be a lot of podcasts coming out between lead up to the Moscone. Emily Frazier is going to be coming on to the podcast again to do a pre-Moscone episode, and then we will do – or I will do this episode that basically gives a history of the Moscone, and then I will have probably a normal recap episode next week. So there should be quite a few podcasts getting into your feed over the next couple weeks, and hopefully that's a good thing. But so thanks for that suggestion for that podcast, and you, if anybody's interested, that will be in your feeds very soon. So moving on from that. So with that, we can jump into the fun part of the podcast, which is the two shout-outs. So, Eugene, do you have a person in mind you'd like to shout out to?
Maybe not a person, but I figured I'll give a shout-out to the pool rooms that I guess I consider my home pool rooms. Cahill's, Sports Bar and Grill, and Pew's. They're in the Metro Atlanta area, so if you guys are, visiting Atlanta, check them out.
Yeah, absolutely, swing through there. What kind of situation do they have at each of those pool halls? Which how many tables do they have, and what kind of tables? And do you know the owners personally by chance?
I know the owners, but just as acquaintances. Cahill's has got the. Maybe what, eight tables, eight Brunswicks, diamond in another room, separate room. Q's has a lot more tables. It's a bigger room. Got a few diamond tables that are that play pretty tight. Those other rooms are very nicely run. Great service, great staff. You can find a lot of good players there as well. So,
yeah, awesome. So, if you're in the Atlanta, Georgia metropolitan area, swing through and help support the local pool halls in the area.
For sure.
And my shout out this week will go to Corey Duell and Max Eberle. So, I'm going to give a double shout out this week because I'll start with Max. So, Max. Ridiculously gracious. He was kind of put in a bad situation where he was under the impression that he was going to be one of the finalists for the Team USA for the Moscone Cup team. Corey was as well. But Max, obviously, neither Max nor Corey obviously made it. And everything that Max has put out there publicly has been extremely supportive and extremely gracious. He basically thanked Team USA for the opportunity to be considered for this and completely took the high road. And I definitely think that the high road was taken, definitely genuinely. He did not just say it because he felt like he should have said it. He said it because he actually felt it, which is pretty cool and a really good testament to his character that he's able to feel this way, even with maybe a bit of a raw deal. But so let's move on to Corey. Corey, I don't think, and I don't know this for sure because I haven't talked to him, but I think he's a little, let's say, disappointed by the decision that was made. And you wouldn't know it by the things that he's come out publicly and said, or at least the things that I've seen him say. He's kind of just kept his head down and just basically kept to himself on the matter. And that's, while it probably isn't necessarily as perfect, we'll say, as Max Eberle's reaction to it, he didn't really put anything on blast. And that in itself is also kind of admirable. this wasn't the greatest deal that he could have had. And I think in his heart of hearts, I think he thought he was going to be the representative for the Team USA this year. And it had to have been incredibly disappointing that he wasn't chosen for that. So the fact that he could take the high road still by just kind of not saying anything at all is, again, a pretty admirable thing to do. And it's probably not the easiest thing for him to have done. So thanks to Corey and Max for not putting the pool world on blast and kind of giving it a worse reputation than it has when these types of situations happen. Those will be my shout outs this week.
Yeah, perfect. There was a lot of people were just expecting drama, you know, when that announcement came out that Max and Corey are out of the picture for Team USA. But yeah, I echo that sentiment. They did a great job in kind of just being appreciative of what opportunities that they got to participate in. And, you know, I think it's going to be great that everybody's behind Team USA. We're, you know, unified and, ready to take on the Team Europe. So it's a great thing to see.
Yep, I agree. For anybody who did not listen to last week's podcast, and this is the first one that you're listening to this one first, if you want to know how I actually feel about that one, you can head back to that episode and listen. I feel like I kind of broke everything down, what happened and kind of why it happened, decently, to where you can kind of understand what happened. Did you want to give your opinion on that?
You know, I mean, I think that the biggest complaint that I'm hearing is that, you know, the selection process just wasn't transparent, or that it wasn't being followed for what was publicized. You know, but then again, you know, they did say that it was ultimately up to the coach's choice and decision. It's probably a tough decision for Coach Johan as well. And obviously, you know, very tough for Max and Corey. It is what it is. I think right now the focus is really to just have everybody in Team USA prepared and ready, for the main event.
Yep, I agree. Do you think it was the right choice? Do you think that this is the best team that the U.S. could come up with, or do you think Corey or Max would have been a better option?
I don't think it would matter that much. Is my opinion, really.
Interesting.
I think in the past, the way I was seeing Team USA, it was kind of just the personalities, for whatever reason, just wasn't gelling. You know, the whole team wasn't acting as a team compared to like Team Europe.
I agree with that.
And maybe that's, you know, because of some coaching aspects of it. The mentality mindset was not right, but you know, I think it's improved a lot, and you can actually see the changes and the team dynamic being quite different. I mean, I dare say in the recent years.
I agree. I would say not only were they not on the same page kind of as a team, like you said, but they were also outclassed in talent, at least over like the last, let's say, 15 years, 10 to 15 years. The U.S. Right. has really had a big void in talent that Europe has not really had. So not only were they not working as a team, they were also completely out-talented. That's not necessarily the case anymore, I don't think, especially with the emergence of Tyler as kind of really, I mean, almost on that tier of the top players in the world now. So now the U.S. can legitimately put out there three of some of the top players in the world, I think, in Sky, Tyler, and Shane, that in the last, say, 12 years, the U.S. has really only had one player, and that was Shane. In the last couple years, Sky has definitely emerged to join Shane, and now Tyler is joining those two as well. So there's a real argument that could be made that we have three of the top players of three of some of the top players in the world. And that competes with Europe a lot better than it has historically in the last, or at least the last near history.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember Tyler's debut, you know, what his first match was against...
big win over Niels.
Niels, right? I mean, this was like a multi-year MVP. He's got, you know, tons of Moscone experience behind him. And yeah, I remember Tyler's debut, and he just... crushed it. Yeah, I mean, he really performed that year in Moscone.
Yep. So I guess we'll keep the rest of the discussion for the Moscone for a little bit later on in the podcast. But for now, we can move on to the pro wrap up. I'm going to be skipping over the Wisconsin stuff for the next couple of weeks. And I probably should have actually clarified this in the beginning of the podcast, but I am going to basically, I think what the suggestion that I had was that get rid of the Wisconsin stuff. That was, for the most part, that was kind of what people wanted as a listener base. I had a couple people reach out with, you know, let's keep the Wisconsin stuff, but maybe keep it shorter, and that's fine. But people still, there are some people that still want Wisconsin stuff, and most people want it gone. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of the Wisconsin stuff on these episodes, and I'm going to, once every 2 to 3 weeks, I'm going to come out with a Wisconsin-only podcast, which will cover everything that's happened in Wisconsin, all of the storylines that are going on, and all of the results. And that way, anybody who's not from Wisconsin can basically just delete that if you want to, and all of the Wisconsin people can still get their news and their information during that podcast. I think that was a pretty good kind of negotiation between the two sides of, you know, being in Wisconsin and not being in Wisconsin. So I think that's going to work out, and we'll try that coming up probably towards the end of my semester, because I don't have enough time to take on another adventure, unfortunately. But at some point in time, I'm going to start that soon, and I think that's what we're going to do going forward. But so for now, we'll just talk about basically the big event that happened since the last podcast, and that was the railroading of Shane Van Boning over Dennis Arcoyo. I don't know. I don't think anybody's overly surprised. I mean, there's always going to be people who think somebody like Dennis would have a chance there, but I think as a consensus, most people thought Shane. Is that kind of what you thought too?
Yeah, well, you know, I actually, and we had a poll on the Facebook page, and I actually was predicting Dennis to come out ahead winning this thing, you know, and I was predicting maybe 120 to, you know, low 100s with Dennis on top.
And you really thought that?
Yes, I really thought that, because, I mean, wow. Dennis has been, I mean,
he has been hitting the ball real good.
Right, he has some big matches, you know, this year, and he's done pretty good on them.
I did vote for Dennis in that to be a contrarian too. When I think when I voted, it was like 92% or something like that was picking Shane. So I decided to pick Dennis just to, you know, be a contrarian. But I didn't think Dennis could win, and I didn't think Dennis could win for a couple of reasons. One, Shane doesn't play these matches unless he's going to win.
That's a good point.
It's kind of half joking and half not, right? When was the last time that Shane has ever lost one of these big matchups like this? And I'm not counting Cheng as that, because that was basically a free roll into the $10,000 tournament, assuming Clash of Titans ever happens. Because I don't actually see them scheduling another one of those, and they haven't had one since, I guess, Sky lost. I think that was the last one. Sky lost to Shaw. Was that the last one? No, right. the last one was Roberto Gomez and Justin Bergman, I think, was the last one that they had, and that was several months ago. So I don't actually know where that process is. I should probably reach out to Sullyvision and see where that process is, but. Basically, I'm not counting that, because Shane lost to Cheng in that, and there was no money on the line. There was some money maybe behind the scenes, but to play that match, there was no $50,000 or anything by either player. So just looking at the matchups that Shane has participated in over the last basically 10 years, I don't remember the last time Shane's ever lost one of these. So right. I'm kind of halfway joking when I say Shane doesn't play these unless he's going to win them, but it's kind of true.
Yeah, and I mean, it's evident that the tempo is just long race tempo. It's his game.
Yes, he definitely, and that actually, we'll get to this in a little bit, the actual nuts and bolts of the match, but the break was the difference in this match. Dennis was breaking the balls very poorly, and Shane was surgical about making the nine ball into the side pocket and usually getting one of the four railers to go.
Yeah, and I heard Dennis was practicing the break and just couldn't get anything going, just couldn't get the consistency that Shane developed.
Yes. So I guess, yeah, that's kind of why I thought Shane was going to win.
Shane, your prediction came pretty close too. You shared with me that you were predicting 120 to 83.
I think I said 120 to 83.
Yeah, and it came out to be 120-85. I mean, you were within two games. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it wasn't, not too bad, huh?
Yeah, good handicapper.
Yeah, and it's just and I've been told this by a player on the tour. I won't say who, but I do know that this from insider information that Shane will not play one of these matches unless he feels like he's going to win it. Mm-hmm. And that's, that kind of makes sense to a point as well, right? Because, I mean, Shane is predominantly over the course of his career been known as a tournament player, five-time U.S. Open champion. He has won just about every major title that you can come up with. But he's never been known as the number one gambler in the world, which has kind of always been owned by Dennis Arcoyo throughout this entire, span of Shane Van Boning's career. So Shane doesn't necessarily need these big matchups to make his living. He makes them through winning tournaments. It's kind of the other players who, historically have kind of made more of their bread and butter through these big gambling matchups. So the incentive for Shane to even play in them is almost nothing. So if to get Shane to actually want to play in one of these events, you probably have to either make it a lot of added money or he has to feel that he's not gambling. And mm-hmm. I think over the recent history, he only plays in matches where he's not really gambling. I mean, he beat down on Shaw pretty bad. He beat down on Dennis, twice now? Three times?
Yeah, something like that. At least twice.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time he actually lost a match. I was talking about this at the pool tournament I was at this weekend, and I think the last actual big matchup that he's lost was a tar match. And when was the last time the action report was around? They've been gone for so long. I don't remember any matches that he's lost since then. Can you think of any?
Yeah, so he, way back, 2008, I think he played Alex Bagalayan, a long race as well. The money was not as much. And he lost, Alex came back and, on the last day, with a gap of 20 something games, and Alex came back. But then, that was a, that was when both of them were really young, right? That was 11 years ago. Yeah, but you're right. I guess Shane hasn't really lost any of these big matches in recent memory. It's just crazy how crazy good that he was with the tempo and the break.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about the matchup now. Kind of how I hinted before, as far as just the nuts and bolts of the games themselves, Dennis missed some shots that you wouldn't expect him to miss. And in fact, one big one really comes to mind. And, I would never want to say that somebody lost a match on day one. But I honestly and truly believe that Dennis lost this match on day one. And he was down 15-5, and Dennis gets the match back to 18-15, and he's running out, and he has a pretty easy seven ball. It's probably about a 1x1 diamond out of the top left corner, And the cue ball is about, you know, probably an inch inside the diamond right out of the side pocket. So, you know, it's a pretty simple back cut of the 7 into the corner pocket. And the 8 ball was basically in the jaws of the side pocket. And the 10 ball was right where it always is, right where it sits when you rack the balls. And Dennis missed that 7 ball. And like I said, I don't want to say that he lost this, but I actually kind of am saying that he lost this match on that day. He misses that ball. Shane gets out. And instead of it being 18-16 with Dennis breaking, it is now 19-15, and then Shane runs a 6. Dennis doesn't get back to the table with a real good opportunity until he's down now. I think it was 26-15, and Dennis never got. I don't think he ever got within more than 8 games from there. It's hard to say that if Dennis doesn't miss that ball, he actually is going to win the match, because I still don't think he would win it. But I think the match was lost at that point, and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of the story of what I thought the match was kind of Dennis missing kind of easy balls. He didn't miss a ton of, you know, those balls that you think could be missed, but you're probably going to, you know, the 35% chance miss shots. He missed a lot of like 4 and 5% chance of missing mm-hmm. balls. And Shane didn't hardly miss any balls that he shouldn't miss the entire match. So that's what I think basically ended up making Dennis lose. What were your takeaways as far as, you know, maybe why Dennis lost or why Shane won?
Yeah, I think it's just, yeah, for sure Dennis was missing, you know, way too many shots that he just couldn't afford, especially when his break is not as strong as Shane's, right?
Shane's break was just about perfect.
Yeah, if your opponent already has that advantage over you and you're still, like, missing shots and whatnot, I mean, he ended day one down like 11 games. It was like 40-29, so he never really recovered from that, you know, approximately 10 game deficit. I think your take is right on.
And I'm blanking on the, do you remember what the score at the end of day one was? At the end of day two, I think it was like 80-52. And so the crazy part about that was the end of day one was 40-29. Dennis comes out and wins the first two games. So the score is 40-31 at that point, which means from that moment on, Shane won day two 40-20. That's just, I mean, that's crazy. A player as good as Dennis Arcolio gets beat 2-1 over the course of 60 games. It's almost unfathomable for me to think that it's even possible. But it kind of comes down to the break shot. I mean, Shane broke the balls well, and Dennis was losing the white into the side pocket or not pocketing a ball, and he couldn't consistently get a ball down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I would say there's probably like a mental aspect to that as well. I mean, like his body language is kind of, you could just tell he was just like frustrated and just mad, upset, and whenever your mind is not in the right place, going against an elite pro like Shane, it's doubtful you're going to go far.
But at the same time, it's so hard to not, you know, get frustrated with what's happening. When you're not able to pot the balls, and you know, it's a tough spot to be in, unfortunately. But I guess that's the joys of playing against Shane Van Boning. I guess you better take advantage of the opportunities you get and don't miss easy balls.
Shane can kind of just transform the game in terms of, kind of emphasizing how important the break is, especially in 10 ball, right? I remember back then, nobody really cared about the break. It was just like, you know, slam it and pray that something goes in. But Shane has showed that with, you know, practice and discipline, you can actually have a more predictable outcome in your breaks and gain a true advantage in competition.
Yeah, and that's actually a really interesting point that you make there, because you can actually point to some of those old school players who are still kind of hanging on, trying to scrap a living out in the game of professional pool. The biggest name that comes to mind right away is Earl Strickland. When him and Sky are playing, and Earl basically says you can't use a break that you've basically practiced the last 10 years perfecting, Sky, we're going to now break from the box, and you have to rely on the way that I break the balls at pure luck, right? And how many times have you heard, I'm gonna predict that you've heard this just as many times as I have, Earl would be one of the best players in the world if he could just have Shane's break.
Oh,
well, that's,
no doubt.
That's kind of admitting that Earl is unwilling to try to break better, right? I mean, that's basically what that statement is. If Earl would try to break better, he'd be a better player. Well, of course, but he's stuck in his ways, kind of like what you just said, is he wants to hit the balls as hard as he can and just pray for the best.
Yeah, and I mean, pool, it's just, there's you know, various transformations that kind of improve the game and how people play it. You know, like Efren kind of brought in the kick game, right? He made everybody, you know, learn how to kick better because of his mastery of kicking and his carom skills, right? And you know, in the similar way, Shane has transformed the game with his break. There are players like jumping shots now, right? They can probably play every shot as a jump shot and, you know, still make like 90% of the ball. It's just amazing.
Players like Bustamante with their banking. I mean, Boosty banks the ball so good. I mean, I think that we're definitely in one of those. We're kind of at the tail end of that now, where like you can't make a nickel on the pro tour if you don't break the balls like God. And I think going forward, it's going to be kind of the same way, but with jump cues. I think that's kind of the revolution we're in right now, is where everybody's good with the jump cue. Players
who don't want to adapt, I mean, you know, that's too bad. I mean, that's just the way the game, you know, the game is now. You know, just kind of have to, I guess, like you said, evolve along and improve your game in these aspects as well. So,
and actually, breaking off of that, I'll tell a tiny little story. I was playing in a tournament, and one of the guys that I was talking to before the tournament, we were talking about jump cues, and he basically says, jump cues are cheating. I will never own a jump cue because, you know, that's cheating. Nobody should be using a jump cue in this game. This game isn't made for jump cues. And I tried to talk him out of it. I'm like, you know, this is the way the game's going and you got to adapt or die. And he's like, no, I'm too proud to use a jump cue. Basically is what the conversation came down to. Well, guess what? We have to play each other in the tournament. And guess what safeties I'm playing for? I'm playing for taking away his kick lanes and leaving him, he doesn't own a jump cue. He doesn't have a jump cue in his bag. So why would I defend against a shot that he doesn't have in his arsenal? You know, it's almost like a cheap thing maybe for me to do, but you're telling me exactly what you're unwilling to do or unable to do. And as a player, I feel like it's negligent if I do not take all of that knowledge into account when trying to win a match. So, I'm not going to say who the player is, but I'm going to win that match 95% of the time anyways. But the fact that you told me that you aren't going to, you know, basically use an arsenal of the game that's available to you, that just made my job so much easier. I no longer have to worry about you making a jump shot on me.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, if it's in competition, you know, it's all fair game, right? I mean, you exploit your opponent's weaknesses. There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody's there to play to win.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I guess we can, is there anything else that you'd like to chat about for this, this matchup?
No, I think that's all, but, a shout out to, you know, the venue, First Break Sports Bar and Roy's Basement. And,
that's a great idea for
putting it together. Yeah.
That's a great idea. We should get those, Roy's Basement put this event on. I'm not going to say that any entity in pool is more important than Matchroom at this point. Matchroom is I honestly think Matchroom is a godsend for the game of pool. But if there is going to be an honorable mention to that, it is Roy's Basement and Ariel. What he does for the game is just fantastic. He brings players over from the Philippines to basically grind out a living in the game of pool. He puts on amazing events. He has an amazing social media following. Everything that he does for the game is gold. So, if you don't support Roy's Basement, it's a lot like Matchroom. If you want the game to grow, you're going to have to put your eggs in the basket of the people that are doing good things in the game. And I don't think that there's two people in the entire game of pool who are doing more than Matchroom and Roy's Basement in different ways, of course. But I mean, those two are the golden ticket we have to actually make this game what we want it to be, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Roy's Basement has done so much, in recent months, just putting these big matchups together, and just being active. Like, he streams a lot of the matches for free, a lot of the games for free online on Facebook, and just very approachable by fans. And yeah, definitely listeners should check out Roy's Basement on Facebook.
Yeah, definitely. And support him in any ways that you can too. I'm not telling you to send him your paycheck or anything like that, but if he has maybe a stream in the future and it's something that's of interest, help him out. Maybe buy a pass or something like that. It's not too much of a difference. I would hope that, 20 bucks isn't going to make a huge dent in your quality of life. But it does make a difference if people support the people who are trying to make the game better. So we're all eventually going to have to kind of pool together to try to get some money flowing through the game to try to help the players out and the entities that are trying to make the game grow. So I guess we can leave it there, and we can move on to what's coming up. So we will now turn to the look ahead to the Moscone Cup. And I'm going to do this with all the guests that I have on here, where I kind of pick their brains about stuff. And I'm going to save all of my opinions for a little bit later on, because I can do that because it's my show. Ha ha. But let's get your opinions and what you think's going to happen. We'll start with Team Europe. What do you think about the rounding out of the team? Are there any players in Europe that you think would have made a better spot? Do you think that this is the best they can do? What's your general idea of what Team Europe brings to the table?
I think they got a pretty good team. Niels is by far the most experienced, and the oldest as well. I think the other Team Europe,
but still sneaky young.
Yeah,
I mean he's in his mid 40s, and it seems like he's been in the Moscone Cup since he was 40 years old.
Early 40s, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, they got a good team. I mean, Jason Shaw just recently captured the title in the International Naibo Open, right? Kazakis, Eklund Kachi, and Filler, they're all top elite European players for sure. So it's not going to be a cakewalk for Team USA, but I think all the fans can expect great matches.
Yeah. Is there anybody in Europe that you think you would have transitioned into the team?
No, I think they got I think they have a good team, good choices there.
I think they got it right. Let's switch over to the US side then. We kind of chatted about this a little bit earlier, and you'd kind of hinted that you thought that Justin Bergman was probably the right choice. Is there any other players in the US outside of the ones that were picked that you thought could have made an addition to the team? Or maybe a better way of saying this, was there anybody else in the country that you would like to see on the team?
I think I'm happy with the Team USA selection. And I think, the last person, be it Justin or Max or Corey, I think, either one of them would have been a great compliment to the whole team. I think the coaching is a big factor as well. I think Coach Johan has done a good job, whether or not whatever your opinion is of a European coach coaching Team USA, you know, that's beside the point. I think he's demonstrated that, you know, he knows how to coach the professional pool players, no matter, you know, their country of origin. So, I mean, I think that the teams are great. The matchups are going to be, explosive. The fans are, you know, the fans definitely have something to look forward to.
I agree. So, actually, Matchroom and Emily Frazier just announced this, I believe this morning, the fans' choice is coming back again this year. So who is your fans' choice? Who do you want to see first on day two?
I want to see Shane and Filler.
You want to see Shane and Filler. I want to see that because I think that's going to be the best match of the best two. But I think the match that I want to see more than any other match is probably my two favorite players in the entire world, and that's Tyler Steyer and Alexander Kazakis. And that's just because I really, really, really like those two players. So, I think that one's going to be my choice. I also really wouldn't mind seeing Tyler and Eklanti Kachi.
Okay.
What do you think the best matchup would be if the U.S. wanted to sneak a win, an easy win out of the player's choice?
An easy win? I don't know if there's anything.
Quote unquote easy win. Maybe I should say. What's the easiest win?
Maybe Shane against Kachi.
I think it's Tyler versus Niels because for whatever reason, Tyler seems to be having Niels' number the last few years.
Yeah.
Tyler's my pick for everything. Tyler.
You're definitely a Tyler fan, huh?
If there's a question, the answer is Tyler. In some sort of way, it's Tyler.
Well, I'm sure Niels is happy to be back on the team. And I think in a way, he's kind of picked as an anchor to the whole Team Europe, right? I mean, he's got the most experience. He's the oldest. So, we'll see. But I think any player, it's gonna be a great match.
Yeah, it's Neil. It's weird, right? Because Niels was the MVP for the Moscone Cup. How many times? Do you know how many times?
Oh, I don't know, 5, 6. He probably lost count himself.
So he's been the MVP 4 times. He was the MVP in 2011, 2013, 2014, and 2015. I feel like in 2016 they just gave it to somebody else just because you can't have a four. It's got to be that, right? I mean,
yeah.
But it's going back to your statement. I mean, he is an anchor, right? I mean, he's been there for so long and he's just been so rock solid all the time.
Oh yeah,
and it's Yeah, I mean, it's. I think that I would have liked to have seen David Alcaide on Team Europe, like I said in the previous episode. But I don't see how you can go wrong with a bunch of choices. A Fedor Gorst.
Or what about Max Lechner?
Even Max Lechner.
International NIBO Open.
I would like to see him have a little bit more of a track record just to know that it wasn't a, kind of a fluke.
Right.
Because, I mean, I can remember back to when I won my first pool tournament when I was like 14 years old. And it was an open event. And I remember kind of looking back on it now with some of the names that I beat. And I had no business even being in that tournament. I didn't have any business cleaning the shoes of some of the people in that tournament, and somehow some way I found a way to win that tournament as a 14-year-old kid. And I don't think I did anything for like the next 3 years afterwards just because I used up all my luck in that one tournament. But I guess moral of the story is every now and then some really weird things happen in pool, and let's just hold off a little while to see if Max is real or if this was kind of a one-off.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a lot of the Europeans, he's well known, in Europe. I think he just hasn't played a lot of the tournaments in the U.S. until what we saw last in the U.S. the International NIBO Open.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely keep an eye on the that young man. He was a giant slayer.
Yes, he was.
In that tournament.
Yes, yeah. He was. Okay, so let's get some predictions for you. What do you think the final of day one is going to be? Not having a lineup, but let's just, you know, what do you predict the day one score will be?
Well, that's tough. We're gonna predict day by day, huh? I don't know. I think it's gonna be close, probably within one game.
Well, okay, I'll let you out easy then. What do you think the final score of the Moscone and who wins?
Final score, so it's 2-11, right?
2-11.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with 11-9 again, the same as last year.
With
Team USA on top.
With a Team USA win, huh? All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. I'm sure you just made a lot of US fans happy, and for the couple European fans to the podcast that I have, you just made an enemy. They're no longer going to like you.
I really think the whole team just turned a corner, so to speak. You know, just the whole dynamic is so different now. I'm really optimistic for Team USA.
Yep, I will hold off on my prediction as to whether or not I think you're right, because, like I said, it's my podcast and I get to do that. So I'm going to give my prediction closer to the date. But yep. So with that, I guess we can move on to the end of the podcast. Okay, so at the end of the podcast, we will give our two tips. Would you like to give your tip first for the listeners?
Good question. So I guess I have one tip that I find pretty profound, and I read it somewhere online, scouring the web pages about pool. Someone wrote that in pool, every shot is a straight shot. You know, and when I first read that, I'm like, that's pretty deep, right? I mean, there's a lot, many angles, and that you can shoot a shot, but really it's all about keeping it straight and steady, and every shot, no matter what you're doing, it's a straight shot. Yeah, so that's my tip for today.
Keep all the shots straight. Definitely not bad advice. Okay, my tip for the week is going to be, and this will be just kind of like a generalization one. When you are playing, and we'll go, this is kind of like my going back to the league stuff that I had the last time too, is since it's kind of the startup of league season for most people. Don't play on a league team that doesn't hold you accountable. And what I mean by that is you're always going to play with your buddies, right? And your buddies that just want to get drunk. And, you always have that team in your league where everybody just wants to get drunk and have a good time. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But if you want to actually take the game serious and become a good player, that type of atmosphere is not going to harbor the proper type of atmosphere for you to actually get good at the game and take the game seriously. It kind of sucks to potentially say goodbye to a team that you've played with for a long time. But if you're playing in an atmosphere that really just isn't serious and nobody really cares about getting better or actually playing the game for the sport of the game instead of just to get out away from the wife and have a good time on a Tuesday or Wednesday night or something, you're not going to really get much out of it. And, there's definitely, if you're playing in a league just for that atmosphere, there's nothing wrong with it. But if you're playing in a league to basically hold yourself accountable to playing and practicing, you want to probably put yourself in the best atmosphere possible to be able to do that. And so that, I guess, will be my advice this week, is to play on a team that is, regardless of where you're at as far as like seriousness to the game, try to surround yourself by people who also kind of hold those views, whether they're, super serious or, just casually serious but wanting to get better. It'll ultimately help you out in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely good advice.
Yeah. So I guess with that, I will close out by thanking one of my sponsors to my one of the sponsors to the podcast. And this week I am going to thank, I'm going to thank Chris Santana. Chris Santana reached out to the podcast after hearing it and liked what I was doing and wanted to jump on board and help out in any way that he could. And Chris Santana is, he is the owner of Fast and Loose Designs. And he has some of the funniest, kind of most punny t-shirts that are out there. It seems like anybody and their cousin these days has a clothing brand and pool, and they're all, you know, kind of, you know, whatever. I mean, starting from like the hustling gear that seemingly every single pool player who was a pool player owned, to now, you know, that you could name off the top of your head 20 different places that all make apparel, and that's fine. I mean, it's good that there's a market for this stuff, but my endorsement goes to Fast and Loose because they support the podcast and they have the funniest t-shirts out there. So if you haven't seen them or went to his website, you don't even have to necessarily buy anything. Just go over and look at them because they're genuinely pretty funny. You can head over to fastandloosedesigns.com. Yeah, fastandloose.com, which is F-A-S-T and then the letter N, not and, the letter N, loosedesigns.com. And just go over and check out his wares. And, you know, if you like the podcast, support the people who help make it happen. So my thank you will go to Chris Santana this week. And with that, welcome to the podcast officially, Eugene. You've been helping out a lot recently, and I think that you're doing some great work and some great content, and I'm glad that the listeners get an opportunity to see what you're doing. So thanks a bunch for everything that you've done in the last few weeks.
No, yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. So definitely happy to be on board.
Yep, I agree. So with that, we will close out for another week, and thanks all the listeners for tuning in, and till next time. Thanks for coming to my party. Now that we're all out to grow, it's time to go home. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com, and Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.